and Jay Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. That's why I say
Amen, I shot. Every weekday at 8 o'clock, it is Shot or No Shot. Jeff Meller, Brian Hanley in for Cap and Jay Hood today. Of course, we're being produced by Charlie Bevins, who will take over as we do Shot or No Shots. Brought to you today by
Club Hawthorne. Bet the Breeders' Cup on November 4th and 5th at a newly remodeled Club Hawthorne betting bar. And you hear that sound? That's the sound of our good friend, Secretariat. Next time you hear Secretariat on Cap and Jay Hood, give us a call. And if you're in the caller number 5, you will get a $100 in food and beverage credit, $425 wagering vouchers for the live racing programs and Hawthorne branded items.
Can I go back and bet the Breeders' Cup on the 4th and 5th now that I know what the results were?
Does it work that way? That could... Listen, you want to entice some new gamblers. That's the way to do it, I think.
Yeah, here you go. Yeah, a couple weeks past the Breeders' Cup. Let's go run those again.
Retroactively, go ahead and bet them. Of course, Secretariat, according to half the Cap and Jay Hood show, the greatest athlete in the history of sports.
I mean, I have a great appreciation for horse racing and actually had and owned some horses, but no.
But no. That's fair. All right. I'm Meller and Hanley in for Cap and Jay Hood this morning. All right, Charlie, get us kicked off here. Shot or no shot?
All right, let's do this. The Bears traveled to New York this weekend to take on the Jets, who seem to be in a bit of disarray after benching Zach Wilson following Sunday's abysmal performance. That will mean a reeling Jets team will be led by Mike White. After this game, the Bears face the Packers, Eagles, Bills, Lions, and Vikings. So, shot or no shot? This Sunday is the last winnable game on the Bears' schedule.
No shot. No shot. It's the NFL. I think the Lions still on the schedule make it easy to say that's winnable. Now, whether or not the Bears win it, Bri, I think that's certainly up for debate, but it's hard to envision. That would also, by the way, mean that the Bears, if they don't win a game here, would mean they close it on a 10-game losing streak.
See.
And let's be honest. Unless Justin Fields is shut down for the season, I don't think this is a roster that is going to go 10 straight games without a win.
No, I'm with you. No shot, because I didn't believe there was, you know, like the Matt Nagy years where you had 5 and 6 losing streaks. Just as a matter of fact, you just knew there were going to one, at least one was going to come, if not two in the season. This looks like a professional group running the show now. So I didn't see that. Now they've lost 5 of 6. So it's not the best you envisioned, but it's okay because you're going to have a better draft position. But I'm with you. Other teams have found a way to beat the Packers. If you're not going to do it this year, I don't know when you're going to do it. So I'm with you. That 10-game losing streak, that's almost impossible to do in the NFL. And I get that the Lions went 0-16 at one point, but that's really tough to do.
And especially, too, they'd also be theoretically, closing it out with the Vikings and with the win last night. The Vikings are now 9-2. They might
be
in a situation.
Yeah,
the last game of the season, that also could be. It could look very different when we approach it on the final Sunday of the year as to whether or not it's, quote, winnable down the stretch here.
All right. After trading their own second-round pick for Chase Claypool, emphasis on their own, not the one they got from the Ravens, it's been mostly crickets from the Bears' new receiver. In 3 games, he's been targeted 11 times and has gotten 5 receptions for only 32 yards. We've reached a point in this season where we just want to see who can be a foundational piece for the future. So shot or no shot, the Bears cannot go into the offseason with lingering questions about if Claypool is, quote, their guy.
I'll give you honors here, Bri.
I mean, I thought we'd be seeing a lot more of him by now than we have. Veteran guy, and that they said he'll pick everything up quickly. And then like a week and a half into it, they're like, oh, you know, it takes a while for him to get the terminology down. And they kind of sing a different tune. I think by the end of the season, no shot. I mean, you're going to figure this out. Maybe Trevor Siemian is the key to unlock the new receiver. I'm being facetious. With Trevor Siemian, who can't run. Jeff, have you been clocked in the 40 before?
You know, I never have, Bri.
Neither have I. 4.94 for Trevor Siemian. I'm guessing you, in the great shape that you're in, could better those numbers.
Yeah, they're but, They're probably not going to be running the ball the way they do with Justin Fields with Trevor Siemian. That's for sure. I wouldn't think so.
So maybe he, they're forced, because he's a pocket guy, maybe they're forced to throw the ball, and maybe Chase is actually a guy on the receiving end. You got to see. I mean, you gave up a pretty good price to get him, and I was all for it. So let's see sooner than later what you have here.
Yeah, no, I think it's certainly something that we're all hopeful to see him use more and what he's capable of. He's got that 6'4 frame. He's almost 240 pounds. And Chase Claypool, at least we know him in the 40, blistering pace, 4'4 something in the 40 at the combine. Now, the question I think is we're wondering here in Chicago is, you know, does he play at that speed or does he actually play slower in pads, right? Like, that's kind of what we're wondering right now. Now, to your point, Bri, about picking up the playbook, yeah, that's certainly been a little bit of a concern over the last couple weeks. But I'm not necessarily going to freak out just yet. And to the shot or no shot idea, Charlie, I think it's actually, how did you ask us specifically?
Yeah, like, do
shot or no shot, the Bears.
Is it okay for the Bears to still wonder if Chase Claypool is a foundational piece? Or do they have to know whether he is or not by the end of the season?
I would say no shot. They don't need to know just yet, because here's the thing. They still have him under contract for a year after this year. And even though we all want the answers, I think we will know at least enough about where he's at. And they don't need to make a decision on a long-term contract, Brian. Like, the way a lot of people are like, listen, if you traded a second-round pick for him, you imagine, right, that you want to get him locked up to a long-term deal.
Yeah, well,
I agree. I mean, but you also need to see, he needs to display for them that he's worth any long-term contract that he's going to want.
But the conversation they had before they made that trade tells you that they think they know what they have, mm-hmm. because they gave up the second round pick for him. So, I mean, it's not like he just got drafted. For whatever reason, the Steelers weren't high on him, but you gave up a pretty good asset there in that second round pick. So I hope that your scouting staff, your pro scouts, and everyone else think they have a handle on the guy, even though we haven't seen it to this point.
Yeah.
The other part of that, too, is I heard Dan Durkin on Waddle and Silly the other day. He's saying he's just not the same kind of run blocker that St. Brown and Dante Pettis are. So that's the other kind of concern.
We're circling back. It shouldn't be about the runs. I mean, at some point when Justin was healthy, you want to see more passing. Averaging less than 20 passes per game does not get it done. And I know that they doubled the point production, but you got to have a big boy offense going to deep and going downfield, and you have to figure that out. And now it's on pause, no matter if he's out there or not.
Yeah, no, the one thing I'll say is, what gives me hope is that his rookie year, he was a dynamic playmaker with Ben Roethlisberger throwing him the ball. He had 62 catches, 873 yards, and he caught 9 touchdowns. He also ran in 2 touchdowns that season. So he had 11 touchdowns in his rookie year, and he was a big playmaker. So even though we all want him to pick up the playbook quickly, like some players, it just takes a little while. And he has done it at the pro level for one season. And even his second year, while it wasn't as productive touchdown-wise, he still was able to log 860 yards and another 59 catches. So I think he's a starting caliber wide receiver. I think the question is, everyone hopes, can he be that 1A type
difference maker?
And I don't know if we're there with him just yet, but at the very least, I think he'll be an improvement long term on what they had with the receiving core. And so, the truth is, I think you need 3 good wide receivers in the NFL anyway these days.
Sure.
So he may not be the number one, but maybe he can be part of that trio that you rely on going forward.
All right. Last week against the Falcons, rookie safety Jaquan Brisker was everywhere for the Bears, allowing only 1 reception in 23 coverage snaps. He also had 11 tackles and a forced fumble. The youngin has come along quite quickly for the Bears, so shot or no shot, Jaquan Brisker is already the best defensive player on the Bears.
Ooh.
Ooh. you're not spoiled for choice.
Yeah, it's true. That it's not necessarily a high bar to clear to say that. The only thing
go ahead.
I'll give it a shot, because I'm not saying he definitely is, but I definitely think between him and Eddie Jackson are the two, and Eddie Jackson obviously has had his own issues in the past, but I think Eddie Jackson has been really good this year, and he's lived up to the contract. But outside of those two at this point, because I think Jalen Johnson, you know, even though he's playing banged up, he's regressed a little bit this season. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a shot definitely between him and Eddie Jackson.
Yeah, shot. And I'm a little disappointed that Kyler Gordon isn't in the conversation anywhere close. But, you know, they're both in concussion protocol now, too, right? So
correct. And yeah, neither practiced yesterday.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I like everything about Brisker. But again, when you traded Roquan and Smith, you know, the bar, as Jeff said, got a lot lower to clear. And you didn't have, you know, beyond that much going in anyway.
So we'll say shot, but it's not like a huge endorsement necessarily.
Yes.
But I think we're both happy with Jaquan Brisker.
Absolutely.
You know, the question is too, like, you know, I think maybe they shouldn't be, but it's one of those things where because they were both drafted in the second round, Brisker and Gordon, and because they were both drafted ahead of wide receivers like George Pickens, who are still on the board, they're going to be linked to oftentimes Brisker and Gordon, unless Brisker just completely separates himself to a point where he's, you know, a perennial Pro Bowler. So they're always going to be linked in some ways in Bears fans' mind, because I think a lot of people were hoping they would draft one of those, you know, wide receiver playmaker types. And instead you got Velus Jones Jr. in the third round.
Oof. Yeah.
Okay, well, we talked about the Bears. Let's talk about the team they're about to face this week. The Jets team the Bears are about to play is one of the best New York has had in a while. At 6-4, they have taken a step forward this year. But they just benched their starting quarterback they picked in the top five in 2021. Because they've gotten the QB so wrong so quickly, shot or no shot, General Manager Joe Douglas and Coach Robert Saleh will be on the hot seat this offseason in New York.
Shot, because anytime, and we lived through it with Mitch Trubisky, and I know a lot of people said that it was the coach not doing any favors for Mitch Trubisky, and if he had better organization and better coaching around him, he'd be a different quarterback. But, you know, the league has pretty much made the decision on Mitch now, 3.0, even in Pittsburgh. When you get the quarterback wrong and when you draft that high, and talk to Ryan Pace about it, sets you back about 5 years. I mean, that's how drastic when you're in that position in the draft. And obviously, Pace gave up the farm to move one spot because he thought imaginary GMs were going to take his guy. And so he was on the phone to John Lynch, and John Lynch couldn't even understand what he was doing. But he did it, and he did it by himself. You get the quarterback wrong, the clock's ticking on you and your administration. It's that simple.
Yeah, no, it certainly accelerates the process of where you're at when your quarterback is this spectacularly bad this quickly. And it doesn't help matters for the Jets when you've got Justin Fields, who was drafted behind Zach Wilson, balling out and making people regret. You know, that's a lot of what Mitch Trubisky faced, right? If Mitch Trubisky was just a bust, it would have been bad enough. But the fact that Patrick Mahomes and then Deshaun Watson, at least what he's capable of on the field, those two were drafted behind him and were on the board, certainly made the Mitch Trubisky conversation that much more difficult for the Bears to continue to have, you know, day in and day out while they were here. So I think if Justin Fields continues to play well, that won't help Zach Wilson. And then, by the way, if Trey Lance comes back next season and starts to play well too, you know, or
that's a big if.
Yes,
yeah.
No doubt about it, but it's certainly in play. All of a sudden, it looks that much worse, though, if you've got multiple quarterbacks who are drafted behind you playing that much better. Maybe, though, the key for the Jets, and Zach Wilson, I think, is making this easier. The key is if you can cut ties quickly, though, and admit your mistake, like the Cardinals did when they drafted Josh Rosen, right? They got the number one overall pick, and they quickly bailed and said, you know what? Josh Rosen, after 1 year, wasn't the guy, and they said, let's go draft Kyler Murray. If the Jets this year bail on Zach Wilson and maybe make a free agent acquisition, you know, a stopgap QB who can take advantage of what the Jets have around the roster, maybe you can buy yourself a little bit of time. Because I do think
their defense is, I mean, you know, Robert Saleh's doing something right, because you know, the defense is among the best in you know, allowing 18.6 points, and we talked about the six most sacks this season, and Charlie just said the 6-4 record. I mean, the coach is doing pretty well, and he didn't draft the quarterback. So But if you get rid of the GM, then they usually come in and want to put their own guy in place. And we've seen GMs here have to live with a coach, good or bad. And it usually doesn't work out well when it's not their guy.
Charlie, how many more did you prep for us? Do you have a couple more?
Yeah, I had one more.
All right. You know what? Let's take that on the other side. And, of course, we will also give away when you hear Secretariat when we come back. We'll do that right here on ESPN 1000. Mellor and Hanley in for Cap and Jay Hood.
Don't miss the conversation.
Cap and Jay Hood.
Tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
Cap and Hoodie.
Bow, 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 bow.
And listen to Cap and Jay Hood at home and in the office.
Now, back to more Cap and Jay Hood on Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
If you're listening earlier, you know what that sound means. 312-332-3776 to get hooked up. I'm Jeff Mellor along with Brian Hanley as we fill in for Cap and Jay Hood this morning here on the day after Thanksgiving. Bri, so you know Greeny pretty well, I'd say.
I used to do weekend shows with him about 30 years ago, and our careers took divergent paths. Let's see. He turned into Greeny. And I'm here working with you, which I love, but not making, you know, God bless. Knew early on that Greeny was going to be big, I mean, huge, and knew that TV was going to be his calling in some regard, too. And it's all turned out to be true because he was that talented then, and he's certainly that talented now. So, yeah, back in the day when we started sports talking in this town, he and I would do some Saturday and Sunday shows together, and here he is. He's a superstar.
And you can still hear him daily from 10 to noon. The Greeny Show will be up after us today. And, of course, he is still a good friend of the station. He joins Waddle and Sylvie quite frequently, as he did this past Wednesday. And I know a listener pointed out that this Sunday truly is the Greeny Bowl because of the potential. Now, if Justin, now this was also before it looked. It does. I do feel like, I don't know, correct me if you disagree here, Bri, it does feel a little more likely today than it did to me maybe on Tuesday that Justin Fields could be starting on Sunday. Do you agree with that assessment?
Yeah, sadly, I do. Yeah. I don't think it's the wise choice, and some of our Twitter followers are voicing their concerns as well. But, you know, there's a football mindset, like you talked earlier in the show, and it takes a lot to, again, if they leave it up to him, he's going to play, and I don't know that they should leave it up to him because there's only one decision he can make, and that's to take the shot, numbing up, and go out there and see what he can do.
So, yeah, even though it does seem, which, again, for fans, it'll be more interesting to watch the game, but, of course, for the organization, I don't know if it is the best decision. Nevertheless, prior to knowing that, the idea that this is the Greeny Bowl coming up on Sunday, because, of course, Greeny is a staunch supporter of the Jets, and, of course, he covered the Bears for a significant portion of time during his days here in Chicago when he was doing talk shows with you on Saturday mornings. And also, of course, there was the potential, or at least there still is, if Justin Fields does not go, Trevor Siemian will be starting for the Bears. And, of course,
Northwestern's very
young. Yes, yes. So thus, it has been dubbed the Greeny Bowl by some, which was all the reason we needed, as if we needed any reason, but all the more reason to have Greeny on Waddle and Sylvie. And Greeny discussed where the Jets are at, and I thought he made an interesting point, maybe one that I don't necessarily completely agree with, but I'll let you hear what he had to say with Waddle and Sylvie on Wednesday.
The Jets have a loaded roster, guys. Yeah. The Jets are what you are hoping the Bears are next year. The Bears, if everything goes extraordinarily well in Chicago this offseason, then the Bears are going to be where the Jets are right now. They're going to have spent some of this free agent money really wisely in some really smart places, on not necessarily on huge name players, but players who fit exactly what they need, and they're going to hit on all these draft picks, which the Jets have done, the best of whom, unfortunately, is hurt. You're not going to get to see Breece Hall, the running back, because he's out for the year, but he's tremendous. Sauce Gardner is tremendous. Yeah. The Jets have a bunch of Garrett Wilson. They have a bunch of really good, talented young players. So if the quarterback just plays decently, the Jets should win this game on Sunday. If Mike White just doesn't hand the game away, particularly if Justin isn't able to play. But this, I think, will be an interesting game for the Bears fan to watch, because what you are seeing on the field is exactly the template of what I think the Bears could be next year, but they should actually be several steps ahead because their young quarterback is infinitely better.
It's really funny to see how somebody on the outside who's not as, you know, knee-deep into it as we are on a day-to-day basis, how they observe. And, of course, Greeny looks around the league, you know, more than most, because obviously he is doing TV and radio every single day, so he needs to know the league as a whole very well. I find it interesting, though. I look at the Jets roster, and you mentioned it, Brian, earlier. That defense is hellacious. They're amongst the best in the league. Quinnen Williams is just a force at the defensive tackle spot. Greeny mentioned Sauce Gardner. He might be, in his rookie year, he might be the best cornerback in football already. They do a really nice job defensively, and he said the Jets are where the Bears hope they are next year. Man, that is, if they could, because of all the pieces the Jets currently have, he said Breece Hall, who of course tore his ACL, Garrett Wilson, who played with Justin Fields in Ohio State, looks like he has the makings of a clear number one wide receiver. Dwayne Brown, you know, Mekhi Becton, who's on injured reserve and not even playing this year. There, to me, the Jets have a lot of really good pieces that the Bears don't have. If the Bears get anywhere close to developing the type of roster by next year, I would be stunned. Like, I think Greeny's a little bit too optimistic about what's currently on the Bears roster outside of Justin Fields.
Well, and Jeff, he said, well, we know that they have the most salary cap money coming in the offseason by a country mile, right? $100+ million. You hope Ryan Poles is going to spend that wisely. Do we know yet that he said that he'll hit on every draft pick? Well, no GM does that. Do we even know what that track record? It's too early to tell what Ryan Poles' draft record looks like. He's had mixed results after the first one, right? So I can't go there yet. I don't know how good a GM he's going to be. I think he, you know, he's going to be good, you know, in the long term. But I need to see more. I mean, some of the picks he made this year have been some okay, some not so good, and you know, that's pretty optimistic that he's going to hit on every draft pick.
Yeah, and it does though. It looks at, like, I look at, you know, Greeny watches the Jets, you know, his team very closely, and, you know, under a microscope, and sees how problematic it is with Zach Wilson as their quarterback. And as we talked about earlier, you know, the idea that you set your franchise back 5 years if you miss on that, or if you whiff on the quarterback spot. And then he looks at everything else that's in place, and he says, hey, the Jets are 6-4. Where could they be if they had someone like Justin Fields? But the reality is, the Bears are just like, boy, where could we be if we had all the Jets' talent surrounding Justin Fields? You know, but of course, the Jets are, if they can just get that quarterback, they're in a little bit better spot. Here's more from Greeny, specifically about Fields versus Wilson.
For the folks in Chicago who've not seen the Jets play, the Jets have managed to go 5-2 with Zach Wilson as their quarterback. And Zach has had about as much to do with those five wins as I have. And all I've done is watch and cheer. the Jets defense is extraordinarily rough on quarterbacks. Yeah. They generate as much pressure without having to bring extra people as any team in the league, and that's inclusive of Dallas and anybody else you want to name. So I agree with you, and I absolutely love the Justin Fields story, and I think there is such a fascinating the big storyline on this game, and it's a terrible shame if neither one of them play, but the fact that Zach Wilson wound up being drafted well ahead of Justin Fields, and the fact that was not considered to be a shocking development when it happened, is probably the best illustration of what is wrong with the pre-draft process in the National Football League as anything I could ever think of. That said, I agree with you that it is probably best to keep Fields away from this pass rush, because nothing good can happen to his shoulder this Sunday.
Really fascinating to hear. Like, Greeny, from the sounds of it, he's convinced that Justin Fields is the next great quarterback star in this league when you listen to him talk.
Here's hoping, and I've seen enough this year that he's taken a huge step toward that. Still don't know, if he's going to be the guy who can throw the ball like we see some of these other young quarterbacks doing and doing it on a weekly basis, is frankly, they haven't given him, one, the offensive line to do it successfully, and two, enough opportunity. So I saw someone write a week or so ago, 2 weeks ago, that Ryan Pace, if Justin Fields in fact turns out to be a franchise quarterback, we'll remember Ryan Pace more fondly, or much more fondly than we do. To me, it was a calculated move to buy himself some time. He needed to move up yet again in the draft and draft a guy like Justin Fields, if not Justin Fields. And the plan with Matt Nagy was not even get him on the field the first year. And the cynic in me said that by not getting him on the field the first year, their jobs were safe because we wouldn't know. It would put off even eyeballing Justin Fields for at least a year and then another year of development. So I don't know that I'm going to remember much of Ryan Pace fondly, if at all.
No, I completely agree with you. It absolutely was a move that reeked of self-preservation for Ryan Pace. You know, he had botched Trubisky as bad as you possibly could. Almost every first-round pick that he had in his time here, and honestly, now if we look back too, like the one you always pointed to was like, oh, well, at least he had Roquan Smith. But we see how Ryan Poles chose to play that out was, you know, so ultimately, even that, while Raul,
only 19 players on this roster were from the previous GM,
and
in a very short time they've made a determination that they can do without a lot of these guys.
No, that's a great point. It's almost stunning when you look at it, like a year removed and you've only got 19 players left from the previous season. That is infinitesimal when you look at it around the league. Normally, you know, you're looking at 25, 30 players carried over on a year-to-year basis because, you know, turnover, it's just, you know, there's so many replacement-level players out there, but you hope you have the makings of you know, at least half your roster on a year-to-year basis, but that's not the case. And honestly, Bri, they have 19 from the previous regime, and I wouldn't be shocked at all if next year it's looking at more like 10. Based on contract status and, you know, what they're going to be looking at, because I don't think too many players who have been on the Bears roster from the Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy era have done much to really impress Ryan Poles. Anyway,
how many foundational pieces are here? So when that window to compete for a division, let alone a Super Bowl, opens up in a couple of years, 2-3 years, how many on this current roster will be on the roster at that point? I mean, it's, I'm with you. They might half that number, 19, or cut it by 9 or 10 in the offseason, and here we go again.
Thought it was interesting to hear a Jets fan's perspective on the Bears and the Jets as they get set to square off on Sunday in New York. I'm Jeff Meller. He's Brian Hanley. This is Cap and Jay Hood on ESPN 1000.
Listening to Cap and Jay Hood at home is easier than setting your coffee maker.
This picture of domestic happiness is missing something.
Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
What a way to start the day.
Cap and Jay Hood.
On Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Because it's Friday.
It's time for the Friday Folder.
And you ain't got shit to do.
On the Cap and Jay Hood Show.
Cap and Jay Hood Show. They open up the Friday folder to let you know stories that they missed during the week that they were not able to get to because Cap yaps too much. No, that's not true. Just because they were involved in deep conversation that they just couldn't get around to it. So that is when the boys share with you topics that are stories that they thought were worth mentioning. Charlie Bevins on the other side of the glass catches us up on what we missed this week, Bri. And Meller and Brian Hanley in for Cap and Jay Hood, by the way, today.
Yeah, there's been obviously a lot of World Cup, Meller, and since you're here, I figured we would start there. A lot of upsets. Saudi Arabia beat Argentina, and then Germany lost to Japan. Is this common? Like, is the World Cup kind of feature a March Madness quality to it, where there's just random upsets kind of up and down the first few days?
I would say not usually that significant. Now, Germany has been, they're a prolific soccer nation, but over the last few World Cup cycles, Actually, the last one, they didn't get out of the group stage. So they've kind of been a little bit on the decline over the last couple, 4 to 6 years. So Germany wasn't as stunning as the Argentina loss to Saudi Arabia was. The one result that happened early this morning, though, by the way, Iran beat Wales 2-0. And the reason that's significant, Bri, is because now the United States doesn't really necessarily need a result against England today, because U.S. takes on Iran in the final game of their group stage in a few days from now. Now, obviously, the U.S.-England game is getting a lot of hype. That game is at 1 o'clock today. But the U.S. doesn't necessarily need the result as long as they can beat Iran in the final game of their group stage, because Iran beat Wales today. So that is, I think, good news for the U.S. to get out of the group stage. They just need to beat Iran in that final game, and they should be good, assuming, of course, that Wales doesn't upset England in that final game. But that's one that I would be surprised to see. But you never know. I would say, Charlie, the upsets, the Argentina one was a big one, so we did not expect that.
You know, I was much more interested in the World Cup last go around. This one got off on a wrong foot for me when the head of FIFA started moralizing and lecturing and pointing fingers because, immigrant labor, slave labor built on, a lot of guys died building those stadium palaces in Qatar or Qatar. Or
yeah,
the New York Times had a whole story on how you pronounce it, and no one could agree on a way of pronouncing it. Qatar, Qatar, maybe something else. So I haven't watched a minute of it. I did enjoy it last time, but I just FIFA is now right up there with the Olympic Committee that has been corrupt forever. It has had their hands out and just worried about money and stuffing money into their accounts and everything else. So I mean I've soured on the Olympics a long time ago, and as much as I want to embrace soccer, this one just reeks a little bit too much for me.
It's completely fair. And yes, the head of FIFA is a clown.
Yeah.
Much worse thoughts than that. However, and to your point, an estimated 6,000 to 7,000 migrant workers died in the building and construction of Qatar, however you want to say it, in the projects. It's horrifying. I am such a huge soccer fan.
I know.
That I can't not watch the World Cup, but you're absolutely right. It is a World Cup soaked in blood, and so I have no problem saying every time that I mention the World Cup, that let's not neglect the fact that, and don't let countries like Qatar, Qatar, and FIFA being complicit, let them sports wash away what has gone on. You pointed out the New York Times article. I'll mention, too, HBO Real Sports on this past Tuesday did a good 15-minute segment on some of the harsh realities facing the migrant workers and why they choose to leave their countries, which are some of the poorest in the world, just to try and, make a few hundred dollars for their families. It's disgusting, terrible. It's worth mentioning. I hate to get wrapped up in the soccer, but yes, it's horrifying what's going on.
Here's the other thing. Mark Lazarus, who covers the Blackhawks for The Athletic, he tweeted out, I couldn't agree more. He said it's the dumbest thing in sports where only one guy knows how much time's left in a game, in injury time. Just stop the clock. Put the time up there. Let everyone know what the deal is. So when their 90 minutes are over and they're in injury time, the referee isn't the only one who has any idea how much time's left in the match. I mean, come on, what are you doing here?
Well, I've followed soccer for long enough where stoppage time doesn't bother me because I'm accustomed to it. But
I mean, why wouldn't everyone watching know how much time's left? That that was allotted because of the stoppages. It's just one guy in his little clock, and he knows. Okay.
I will say, interesting for those who have watched the FIFA World Cup, and you abstaining, completely acceptable, Brian, understandable. But what they've done this go round is they've attempted to account for all the actual stoppage time. In the past, there would be, it's called, amongst at least a nicer way of saying it, scumbag soccer. When people will just writhe on the ground in pain unnecessarily to waste time. Well, in this World Cup, they're doing their best to account for all of the time wasting. And so you're seeing longer and longer amounts of stoppage time at the end of each game, which I think most soccer fans are applauding because finally teams can't just waste time like they have done in the past. All right, we're taking up all the Friday folder time talking about World Cup soccer. I know Charlie's like, what's going on here? You got a couple more for us, Charlie.
I do. How about this one really quick? This is from Rex Chapman on Twitter, obviously very big following. He says, my father has to have, quote, peanut butter salad every Thanksgiving. And it's the recipe is peanut butter and Dole tropical fruit cocktail just stirred together in a bowl. And it looks disgusting.
I've never heard of that.
I mean, peanut butter goes good with lots of fruits.
Elvis liked the peanut butter and banana sandwiches fried or whatever.
The Dole tropical mix is filled with the sugar infused
corn syrup.
The sugar infused corn syrup. So it's a bunch of peanut butter and some more sugar. So I'm sure it tastes scrumptious, although probably not very healthy for you.
We were debating mac and cheese as a side. Okay.
Anything else, Charlie?
You know, maybe I can save one for the other side. How about that?
All right, we'll do that quickly. And, of course, it's Cap and Jay Hood, so we've got the cut of the day next.
It's Cap and Jay Hood on Chicago's Home for Sports. Follow the show on Twitter, at CapJayHood. This is ESPN 1000.
Things up here on Cap and Jay Hood. Greeny's up next, and you've got Shay Norling and Jesse Rogers in for Carmen and Yurko today coming up at noon. And of course, we've got Waddle and Sylvie in for Waddle and Sylvie today. We'll be Dion Miller and Tyler Aki. So I'll be back with Dion Miller on Sunday for your Bears pregame coverage. And Bri, I believe you will be back with Xander before us on Sunday, right?
Correct, sir. We will be there. Yeah.
So there you go. That's your weekend lineup on ESPN 1000. All right, Charlie, we got one more Friday folder story that we did not get to.
Yeah, I just thought this bore mentioning. The Bills yesterday were the first team to win back-to-back games in Ford Field since 2016. There are so many ways to describe Lions' ineptitude.
Yes.
I think that describes it best.
That's a great bar trivia question. That'll get your drink. Yeah,
that is absolutely a great stat. And by the way, thank you to Jim Lex, our great listener. He mentioned I said the Bills beat Detroit to Ford Field because they had the opportunity to play, as Charlie mentioned, for consecutive weeks there. Jim, who's a big Bills fan, mentioned that the Buffalo did return to Buffalo after Sunday's game, and then they returned to Detroit.
Just so a shovel. Yeah,
I just made the assumption, and that was silly. I mean, you know what happens when you assume, Bri. Yeah. So I assumed that the Bills would hang it out in Detroit, but that was not the case. They actually returned to Buffalo before their game on Thanksgiving.
Pick your poison, Buffalo or Detroit.
Your choice. I think I'll go with Buffalo. Yeah, all right.
I've been there.
Let's go with the you know what? It is always our opportunity to give you the cut of the day on Cap and Jay Hood, courtesy of Chicago Cuts.
Yo.
Yes, it's boring, but it's a sport.
Oh!
Whatever.
Cut it.
It's not boring.
Okay, then you're boring.
All right, cut!
Stuffing? Are you a stuff the bird guy, or the dressing comes on the side because, you know, you think you're going to get some botulism or something if you put it in the cavity of the bird?
Yo.
Yes, it's boring, but it's a sport.
Oh!
Whatever.
It's not boring.
Okay, then you're boring.
All right, cut!
Congratulations, Brian. You were the cut of the day.
At like a side of botulism with my Thanksgiving meal? Thank you.
Yes, yes. Better than a side of debauchery, right? Or I guess actually some would prefer debauchery. Nevertheless, either way. Anything you want to get to before we close it out here? Anything we did not get on your agenda of things to do?
We had a couple of Twitter polls, right?
Yes, yes, we did. Let me see.
Will you be watching the Bears if Justin Fields is not playing Sunday? How'd that turn out?
So as I pull it up as we speak here on the ESPN 1000 Twitter feed, as Brian mentioned, will you watch the Bears play Sunday if Justin Fields does not play? 62% say
yes. The Bears.
Yes, they will indeed. And the other poll question that you prompted on ESPN 1000, do you enjoy making Thanksgiving dinner? What do you think this way went?
Jeff misses most of the Detroit game because of all the prep that goes into the Thanksgiving dinner. It was close early on when I checked.
Yes. 55% say yes, they do enjoy cooking dinner and preparing it for Thanksgiving and for all their loved ones, no doubt about it. All right. Well, that does it for us here on Cap and Jay Hood. I'm Jeff Meller. He's Brian Hanley. Thanks to my man, Charlie Bevins, behind the glass for producing us today. And as I mentioned, stick around. Greeny's up next. You've got Shay Norling and Jesse Rogers coming your way at noon today. And then, of course, Dion Miller and Tyler Aki filling in for Waddle and Sylvie. Bri, any last words?
It's been a pleasure, Jeff. Thanks. It's good catching up with you, man.
Always enjoy hosting with you, Bri. Thanks for filling in with me today. Captain J Hood back on Monday. Thanks for listening, folks. This is ESPN 1000.
From Chicago?